world is room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate. We think too much and feel too little. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness. Without these qualities, life will be violent. All will be lost. All will be lost. Do not despair. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die. And dictators die. And the power they took from the people will return to the people. Will return to the people. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world to do away with greed. Now let us fight to free the world, to fulfill that promise. Let us all unite.
Welcome, folks. You're in the Corporation Nation. You're on Republic Broadcasting. Oh, let's see. It's the 31st of March, Tuesday, March 31st, 2015. Special show today. Well, it's always special when KW is with us. KW is coming to us from Kentucky, where he is, as we've discussed in past shows, well, to put a title on it is almost, it's kind of a strange notion, but a private citizen with all the rights, privileges, and immunities of the Constitution of the United States, which we don't have, and that's what we've been talking about, the method, the sort of process of what people need to do to sort of realize their birthright or realize that they don't have a birthright, one or the other, in this particular society of quote-unquote people who were the creators of this whole thing. And it's interesting because words seem to all go back and fold in on each other, and what I've realized now is that the words public, besides the difference between the word public and private, basically, we have different variations of the word public, and we're going to talk about a couple of those today. But anyway, welcome to the show, KW.
Hey, Clint, buddy, how's it going?
Good, man. I just realized today, actually, as I was talking to someone else, that the word social and the word society is actually a state of publicity. It's a public notion. In other words, it's a body politic, etc. And I was just looking in the dictionaries to sort of verify that. Sure enough, there it is. The community or public is the definition of a society. And so the word social, which also refers to socialism. And see, what I've realized, KW, is that we're living in a state of socialism because we're living in a state of publicity. We're not private. We're in a public capacity. Socialism is defined in Black's Fourth as any theory or system of social organization which would abolish entirely or in great part the individual effort and competition on which modern society rests. Get rid of all competition and substitute for it cooperative action. come on, stupid computer. Sorry, folks. Cooperative action, and interestingly, the word société, French for partnership, all the words that have to do with society are basically a form of partnership in the Latin. Societas is partnership, a contract of partnership, a contract by which the goods or labor of two or more are united in a common stock for the sake of sharing in the gain, etc., etc., etc. So socialism, again, really means publicity. It's very interesting to live in a public entity, basically, to live as a public thing.
Well, what you just described a second ago is what they call the New Deal, where agencies operated by agents with the investment help from the government seek to make their society better or profit from the partnership, because in reality, that's what the organization is, you know, represented by the BC. It is a partnership between you and a corporation called the United States. They're going to invest in you, and they're going to provide you with some tools and resources to increase your human capital, and, you know, and they hope that everybody's going to profit from it. But, you know, everybody does it. There's just a small group of people who profit from it, and everybody else gets holding in the bag.
It's true.
You know, when you break it down, it's nothing but a flim flam, a con. You know, that's basically what it is. And but that is a business relationship that does exist between you as the operator of that entity, where and in some cases you might not have certain rights because they consider you, you know, whether it be an alien or a stateless person or whatever label they want to slap on top of you, you know, which they seem to be pretty good at doing, right?
Yeah, well, absolutely. They call it also a social contract or a social compact, and of course that's right. Sort of what the Constitution sort of created. It was sort of a social society, and it's interesting because they define it in Black's Fourth again that in the pre-social, in other words, when everybody was still in a private capacity, man was not warlike. And not timid. Laws, it says, or Rousseau actually says, laws resulted from the combination of men. Now, another name for combination, remember, is confederacy or conspiracy. So laws resulted from the combination of men who agreed for mutual protection. Listen up, folks. Mutual protection. We all agree to surrender individual freedom of action. Government must therefore rest on the consent of the governed. You always wondered what that really meant, what the consent of the governed meant, the consent of the governed actually meant. It means those who agree to have mutual protection by surrendering individual freedom of action. That's actually what it kind of means.
Yeah, well, that's where the flim-flam, that's the bait and switch. You got to keep in mind that most of the people who run this country and run government, they're businessmen, and that's all they view it as. They just use the government as a big investment company and a cash cow because its revenues are guaranteed by, you know, its ability to tax its persons and property.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what they do. You know, like I said, it really truly is a flim-flam. But when we took a look at the other side of it, you know, there are some people who have benefited greatly from the operation of this entity, which might not have had they not operated it. See, there's a difference between you being what we call in your capacity as one of the constituent members of the sovereignty, one of the people, one of the private citizens, than if you go and enter into a contract with the federal government regarding a partnership. You know, that's two different capacities that you act in. And once we jump into that one capacity as registered agent, trustee, and surety for that entity, that taxable entity that they created, our capacity changes and our legal relationship changes with the United States. And we want to get rid of that legal relationship. But to go in there and claim it in court and say, hey, I'm not part of your society and I'm not operating one of your citizenships or one of your entities, to say it is one thing. To be able to prove it with evidence is something else.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Also kind of interesting is that the when they define the word civil, first of all, a city... A city, as a municipal corporation, going all the way back to England and all the way back to Rome, a public corporation for public purposes. So you wonder what your city is. And again, if you grasp this notion of public, a public corporation for public purposes, everything you do in that city is a public thing. You have no private business there. It's called also a state agency. for carrying on local government, a voluntary association or corporation. And the difference between the forms of a town, or the former word town, one that wasn't incorporated, in other words, is that those who were in the town would meet together and deliberate and vote as individuals, each in his own right, while in the modern version of the incorporated town or city, which makes it a city, basically, all municipal functions are performed by deputies. And in other words, it's representative. So in the town, where actually all people got together and came on their in their own right, in their private capacity, and would vote, that would be a direct, actually direct election, just like our presidential election is indirect. It is not a direct vote of us. It is we only vote to induce the electoral vote and legitimize it, and therefore it's a representative vote. So the city is always in a representative fashion. In other words, it's always the people really don't have a say per se. You always wonder why your city council is so corrupt. It's because they're representatives. you put them up there.
One thing to ask yourself is when we have these incorporations, what we call municipalities, one thing you want to ask is who are the beneficial owners of it?
And it's funny because I never, ever would have imagined that there were. With all the research I was doing into the annual financial statements, the corporation stuff, I never could see anybody that was actually the beneficial owner, as you say.
Well, the beneficial owner is always going to be the one who's receiving the income from it. And in most of the cases, it's the creditors. Almost all your municipal corporations are in debt.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? This is why they tax, so they can pay off their debts. You wonder why the cop is pulling you out of the car, beating the crap out of you? That's because his boss told him, hey, we got bills due. If we don't get the money, we're going to be foreclosed on. And if you don't think a city can be foreclosed on, ask Detroit.
Yeah. Well, of course, I mean, the notion of debt, of course, and this is where it gets real convoluted, but of course the notion of a city being in debt, it's interesting. Now I understand it. Before I could never figure, you know, nothing made sense to me, KW. I got to tell you, when I was looking at strictly the financial aspect and I was saying, well, why are they in debt? They don't need to be in debt. They got plenty of money. Every municipality, including Detroit, could pay off their debt tomorrow, but they don't report it as income or assets. They report it as liabilities. They're able to hide the money, in other words. I could never figure out why in the hell don't these cities just pay off the debt, be totally free and unencumbered by any outside influence. Every city could do it. And then I figured out, and then I started talking to you, and then I started talking to other people, and I figured out, okay, why is it that the state laws and the federal laws only allow cities to invest in federal agencies and federal
bonds.
Securities, bonds, yes. All that stuff. Why is it that the city can only invest in debt instruments according to the law? Oh, now I see. It's because the city really isn't in any way, shape, or form at all independent. It's just an agency. So it does that on purpose to stay in debt. It is like a requirement of the government to keep every city in debt. If they're not in debt, what good are they to them?
Yes. That's the whole point. And, of course, this is where we talk about the elites that are behind the scenes. Now, according to Judge William Hillman, which was a bankruptcy judge out of the District of Massachusetts, he said no one could deny that those representing secured party creditors thought that trustees should be deprived of trust assets. Now, of course, they all giggled and laughed when they said that, but you have to understand what he's saying is. What he was saying is that those who wrote the Uniform Commercial Code, meaning the secured party creditors of the United States and of the Federal Reserve and et cetera, they wrote the law. They wrote the Uniform Commercial Code because that's just the way a creditor could do when in relationship to a debtor. And the thing used to be that you know, a lot of these, what we call cities and towns, were not incorporated, and there was no action against these cities and towns that could be taken. But once they incorporated, then they entered into the realm of Caesar. And as such, they're going to be governed by the laws of Caesar, or should we say the Uniform Commercial Code. If anybody has security interest in your property, UCC Article 9, revised Article 9, governs security interests in all real and personal property. So if anybody thinks that the UCC don't play a role in this, they don't know what to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, a lot of people use and promote the UCC and the notion, the title of secured party creditor. I believe that for the most part, that's a lot of mumbo jumbo in the way it's being presented as some kind of remedy for someone that's still in this system. You know, you can't really be a creditor while you're still a debtor, in other words.
Well, we can claim to be a secured party creditor, and in fact, you may actually be as a trustee in possession having a lien. But claiming one thing and proving it is two different things there.
Right.
So if you have the evidence to prove you're a secured party creditor to that entity, you're going to be sitting pretty nice, and the UCC is going to help you out there. No doubt in my mind, I know. But that's involved in business. Now, what happens when you don't have a legal relationship with another party, and you don't have no obligations, and you don't have no contracts, agreements, covenants, or compacts with the municipal corporation? You know, this is where the agents operating the government. See, I don't believe government is the problem. Government's not the problem. Government is the law, and government is the instrument by which the helm of government is controlled. In our case, it's the Constitution for the United States of America and the Constitution for the several states. These are the governments. Our problem is not government. Our problem are government agents. Racists, bigots, crooks, criminals, pedophiles, murderers, and robbers that hide in these offices and get away with horrific crimes. And as long as they stick together, meaning all the government agents and agencies, as long as they all stick together, they're going to be able to maintain their control.
Well, and this brings up sort of the notion, something I've been kind of wondering. It's kind of an odd question. And if you haven't heard our previous interviews, it will sound really odd. But at what is the cutoff? I mean, obviously, to be in a municipal corporation, you can hold a municipal office in government as a municep. A municep being basically a citizen, right? But as one of the quote-unquote people that we're talking about, the landholders, compared to the citizenry, the commonality, the general public, those that, you know, at what point is the cutoff? As I said, I know that a public entity, a public agent, can hold a public office. The question, I guess, becomes which offices are actually public? I mean, are we talking about underneath it all, does a public citizen actually have the ability to be president, to be vice president, to be a congressman, or do you actually have to have that underlying, you know, privacy? privation, I guess. To get, I mean, where is the cutoff? Because again, I look at the definitions, I see that a municipal person governed by the municipal laws, the governments that are set up to control the third-party agents that we are, the U.S. citizens, can run for municipal office. But the offices of, say, legislature in the state really aren't in a municipal capacity. So what's the cutoff? Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, my understanding is that citizens are, you know, fall in two categories. They're either native born or naturalized when referring to what we call natural persons. But then there's this third group that we call entities created by and under the laws of a group or something. And this is where we get entangled up to operate in that agency, because that entity that we're operating has a different nationality than you. So that puts us into what was called private international law, or what some people would call admiralty. Now, since you are part of that that system, and you operate under that birth certificate, that person, this person is always in what's called the Special Admiralty Maritime Jurisdiction of the United States, and the reason is because he's the taxpayer. He's the one that is subject to all the taxes and excises and seizures of all kind, you know, exactions. So if you're asking where the cutoff is, there's a couple of ways to cut off and separate who you are and how does it, you know, how does it fit all together. You know, first of all, persons are divided into natural persons and artificial persons. And when we look at natural persons, they are divided into native born or naturalized. And we could further derive conclude that there's two other sections concerning natural persons when they're born, and that's legitimate and illegitimate. So going down the line and looking at everything, you're talking about where the cutoff is. Well, the answer is always it depends. And it depends on who you are, where you're at, and what are you doing there. And that's really what it comes down to. Because if you're going to come, if you're from out of state and coming here to one of the cities or municipalities here in Kentucky, you begin to do business, you're going to be taxed. You're not going to come into the city and make all kinds of money and not pay tax. And it's the same way with another state or another city or whatever. So, you know, it sounds complicated, but I guess once you know, it really ain't. Who are you? What are you doing here? You know.
Sure. I guess what I'm more referring to, though, is the consideration, the legal consideration of status when it comes to actually being elected to office. You know, I see all the presidents of the United States are all related, you know, by blood.
Native-born citizens can fill any office. Naturalized citizens may be elected or appointed to any office under the Constitution of the United States, except for the office of president and vice president, of course. And I always like the way they note those words. Native citizens may fill any office.
Yeah.
Naturalized citizens may be elected. So, when you go look at the constitutions and people go look at their state constitution, they're probably going to have a phrase in there that's somewhat similar to this. It'll say that all judges and magistrates are agents and, agents of the people, agents and trustees of the people, and at all times are amenable to them. See, and this is why we have to understand agency so much, because if I'm one of the people and that judge is my agent, can I relieve him of his duty to perform and take over myself? Yes, because a native citizen can fill any office. How else did the judge get the office unless it was by a gift of the people?
Well, let's define the term native then, because it's been a while since I've looked at that word, but I remember it didn't mean what I thought it meant.
Right. When we're talking about citizen, you know, if we're going to break the word down to native instead of native born, now when they put native born, it's a hyphen, so it's one word, native born. That means, are you one of the posterity of the people who created the state? Because if you are one of the people who created, or one of the posterity of the people who created the state, your rights existed long before the organization of the state. The state wouldn't even exist without you. And it depends on who you are, where you come from, what your lineage is. It's for ourselves and our posterity. Not every Tom, Dick, and Harry that comes in across the border.
Well, see, now, the native, this is where it gets a little hard for me. I just looked it up just to be clear here. Latin nativus, you know, I was looking at nativity. I remember now what it meant for Jesus to have a nativity, and I remember now why I was looking at that. Nativus, Latin, a native, specifically one born into a condition of servitude, a born serf or villain. And when we go to native, a natural born subject or citizen. A denizen by birth, meaning one who is incorporated into the nation by birth, one who owes his domicile or citizenship to the fact of his birth within the country referred to. The term may also include one born abroad if his parents were then citizens of the country and not permanently residing in foreign parts, etc. It refers to a person's place of birth, and a person remains a native of country of his birth, yes, even though he's moved away. But see, that makes it sound like not such a good thing, and that's why I was always...
Well, it's always in context, okay? In American law, a citizen is one of the sovereign people, a constituent member of the sovereignty, synonymous with the people. And if you're talking about that kind of citizen, yes, I am that kind of citizen. If you're talking about... And when we joined this social compact called the state for our own good and our own protection, you know, domestic tranquility, secure the blessings of liberty, blah, blah, blah. I'm a beneficiary or a co-parsoner of that parsonary in respect to what we call the state Ohio, not the state of Ohio, because that's a different entity that operates in a different capacity. So when we talk about context of how we use the word citizen, citizen can mean many things. So, just clarify what kind of citizen.
Well, to be a natural born, I mean, is that what you are claiming or are declared to be as a natural born citizen?
Well, native born, yeah. Native born citizen of Ohio.
So it's the same thing, which again goes back to Denison. But
Hold on a second.
The question, though, is what are you subject to?
I'm subject to the laws that govern me and my state. I am not subject to the regulations that Congress imposes under its authority as the government of District of Columbia to regulate its agents and agencies and entities out of the District of Columbia.
And
No matter... who you are, if you're a citizen of the United States, you have that status attached to you. No matter where you go in the world, you're always going to be judged and adjudicated by the laws of the United States. Whether you're in Ohio, Kentucky, Washington, California, Texas, you're a citizen of the United States, you have that status, you are going to be subject to the laws of the United States. No matter where you go.
And all state law, according to Title 42, is color of law compared to federal law.
Well, in most cases, yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, whatever society you're a part of, that's the law that governs you.
All right. Say what? Hold on.
Ohio, that law governs you. If you're part of the United States. Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, when we get back, we'll discuss what that actual law is of Ohio. You know what? Stay tuned, folks. Wake up, wake up, wake up and look around you. We're lost in space and the earth is your home.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Earthquakes, hurricanes, nuclear accidents, terror attacks, and all-out social collapse. With the world today more volatile than ever, the future has never looked more uncertain. Survivalist Magazine is the one resource you can't afford to be without. Claim your free trial subscription now at www.survivalist.com and your first issue ships immediately. Get all the details and more at www.survivalist.com or order by phone. Call 1-866-437-6570. Your survival may depend on it.
Americans are reeling from Obamacare, higher prices, and an epidemic of policy lapses. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com has you covered. World-class medical and surgery at one of Asia's most modern hospitals. 300 doctors, surgeons, and dentists serving 300,000 patients a year. Fractions of U.S. prices. Friends or family forced to go out of pocket? Avoid bankruptcy. Tell them to run. Run like hell. Hit us up now. We'll show you how. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com.
Has your dancing and romancing done gone away? Are you moaning and a-groaning from the stresses of the day? Are you reeling and appealing because a headache's on the way? Well, relax for just a moment. Stress relief is on the way. Of what am I speaking, you ask? The essential oils of long historic use, the wisdom of the ages, the health care of the ancients, frankincense, myrrh, hyssop, and hundreds of others too numerous to mention. What could be more appealing? Do you know that Young Living essential oils has an element of life that makes them extremely effective in body rejuvenation? This element is called vibration, and it works with body systems, not against them. The professionals at Divine Living Oils have tested and been so impressed with this product that we are using them to help others. And who are we? We are health professionals with many years' experience. Trust us, we have seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. Our motto? Because we care about you. Do your health and spirit a great favor. Call us at 304-542-4226. That's 304-542-4226. Again, that's 304-542-4226.
With autumn in the air, it's time to think about getting ready for winter. And it's time to save at HerbalHealer.com. You'll find amazing seasonal savings to prepare you for the fight against cold and flu season. Like Oregacillin to promote lung health. 30 capsules, regularly $34.95, now only $25. HHA Olive Leaf, the natural antiviral, normally $16.95, now 60 capsules are just $12. HHA Elderberry Power, a great flu and virus fighter, regularly $16.95, 60 capsules, now $10. Save on all our homeopathic detoxes. Choose from lungs, kidney, liver, brain, libido, or whole body, normally $26.95, now just $20. Visit HerbalHealer.com and click on the Fall Winter Specials button to save on all our natural cold and flu fighting products. Also explore our Herbal Healer Academy correspondence courses that teach you how to handle your health naturally. HerbalHealer.com, healing the world with nature, one person at a time, since 1988.
Dr. Joel Wallach, author of the famous health lecture, Dead Doctors Don't Lie, presents his newest book, Epigenetics. Epigenetics is required reading for the very survival of Americans, and yes, all of humanity. Modern man has bet on the wrong horse to save them from disease and pestilence. The medical system has failed us fearfully. Join the health revolution. Buy Epigenetics today and receive a free membership to purchase all the products that Dr. Joel Wallach formulated at wholesale prices and receive a free CD of Dead Doctors Don't Lie. All this for only $25 plus shipping and handling. Call 888-311-4311. That's 888-311-4311. Again, that's just $25 plus shipping and handling. And you'll receive the new book, Epigenetics, a free membership and a free CD of Dead Doctors Don't Lie. Call 888-311-4311. That's 888-311-4311.
Psalms is simply baffling to understand what this unappealing object is all about.
Alrighty, folks, welcome back. Here in the Corporation Nation, we're talking to KW today. You know, so it's very hard sometimes, my friend, to distinguish between political liberty, natural liberty, personal liberty, etc., etc., etc. Now we have this root word of liber and libera, libera, Latin, free, and when we look at history, the word republic kind of stems from this old Latin idiom, which was libera res public, which meant literally free from things public. So when we're talking about the true notion of what the quote-unquote state of being, I guess, in a republic, I think we say it wrong by just saying republic. public, I think we need to add that sort of notion of being free from anything public. Libera res public. Libera, in other words, to be private. Latin meaning free, at liberty, exempt, not subject to toll or charge. We hear the word libertas all the time, another Latin word, liberty, freedom, a privilege, a franchise. And when we look at the word denizen and citizen and freedom, we realize that's exactly what they are. They are a franchise, and depending on your state of personality, whether or not you can hold the natural law as your own self-governing interest, or whether or not you need to be governed by the legal law, I believe this is where the notion come from. This always comes to liberation, which is the extinguishment of a contract. You know, so it's how you become free or liberated. In other words, how you are get the franchise that is bestowed upon basically what you describe as someone that's responsible. I mean, that's what it boils down to. Someone that's not taken by entertainment and all this crap around us that prevents us from being knowledgeable and from understanding that freedom, the quote-unquote concept of liberty, is not something that you just have. It's something that you have to – I mean, it's a strange thought, but you actually have to be qualified to hold this state of, again, libera res public. Free from things public. You have to be truly a man of God to hold that position, don't you?
Well, you have to be an honest man, and you have to take care of your business, as people like to say. Uh-huh. But yes, those who cannot govern themselves will be governed by others.
Yeah. Boils down to that. Now, they say liberi are free men, and that's another term that gets really confusing. It's of course one word, freemen, but the notion of freemen in the Saxon law way back when they knew what the hell was happening, they were the possessors of allodial lands. But of course allodial just meant basically that it was the lands of the king or the god bestowed upon the free men that were the liberi. So it's a little confusing when you look at it that way. That doesn't mean that anybody could have those lands, only the freemen.
Well, right. But we have to remember, American law is a little bit different. So when we go back and quote these old English and Roman civil laws, they took on a whole different meaning here in the United States of America under American law, because there was no king. The people were the king. So this changes a lot of those meanings of the words, such as if you use a citizen when used in its archaic form, as opposed to use what it meant at the time of the adoption of the Constitution, as opposed to what it means now. These are different statuses and capacities. And, you know, the people were the king, and they created the state.
It's a strange notion for people because, you know, you think of king as one person. However, the body politic that is the people is the same thing. It's that quote unquote sovereignty. And that gets confusing because you don't want to think of a group of people being a king. It's just strange.
Right.
But that is exactly how it's defined when
you
talk about the notion of king.
Sure. And you know, the people of Ohio got together, the people of New York, Kentucky, Tennessee, and they created a government that would best govern themselves. And when they did this, they gave up certain rights to the federal government, which, of course, has exceeded their power under the Constitution through legal gymnastics and trickery. But each one of the several states of the American Union had all the power that the federal government has came from them. The federal government has no more power over the several states than that which was given to them. But the federal government has unlimited and unrestrained power when it's passing legislation concerning its agents and agencies, especially when they're through the contract having to do with business, the partnership. So you see how it changes? Legal relationship changes.
Yeah, well, that's that notion of the third party, and as long as you're not in that third party capacity, in other words, the low man on the totem pole, well, then you're right as rain. But yeah, and you're right. You know, you look at the state constitutions and you look at the old proclamations and you see, and it was confusing for me for a while, you see that the United States has total and absolute power to, especially after the Civil War, to literally militarily defeat any state that wants to secede from the Union. There is no such thing as secession anymore. Secession is an act of war against the Union itself. And that's, you know, you have all these quotes by Lincoln, oh, I don't give a crap about slavery, I just want to save the Union.
Imagine 13 men sitting around a table and all entering into a compact together, and all of them putting up their share of the money and everything, and one other guy, when he decides he doesn't want to, he wants to jump out. No, it doesn't work like that. You know, you entered into this contract, and we're going to hold you to it.
Well, and that's it's
now,
important.
But however, if a large majority of the 13 people sitting around the table decided, well, you know what, this ain't working out, let's just all go our separate ways, that's a different story. If we had a large majority of the states sit there and say, well, you know what, we've had enough, you know, then the federal government would truly be over.
Well, but see, the problem is that we all consider ourselves the state, right? We consider ourselves as if we have some say in that. And to be perfectly frank, I mean, maybe you'll agree with me, maybe you don't. There's a lot of people out there that say government is not working correctly. I say it's working perfectly. These people are literally making a killing from our lack of knowledge and our voluntary servitude toward it. So it's working just as it's supposed to, according to the den of thieves that are running it. Doesn't mean it has to be that way. It's just the way it is. So I mean, you know, you could look at it as if it's not working and it's ridiculously mismanaged, or you can say actually it's perfectly managed if you consider the
if you understand a different point of view and what's really going on, absolutely. Our biggest enemies are this, and it's corruption and ignorance. Right? And the people who hold offices in the state, especially on the local levels, most of these people are corrupt or ignorant. In either case, they pose a danger to you and I. We can't get proper administration of the laws from the judges. We can't get proper administration of the offices by those elected to fill those offices. And we can't get the agents to function like they're supposed to function in relationship to those offices when we present a document, deeds, and these other kinds of things that, you know, legal things that go on. That's our problem. The problem is not government. Government is the Constitution. That is not the problem.
Well,
the problem is the maladministration of the government or the law.
The perfect example, KW, and again, correct me if I'm wrong here, I could think of no better example of the citizen of the United States in its political capacity, which is not very, very high, just employees, basically. You know, I just compare it to the employees of Walmart. You know, there was so much talk and so much political discussion about the low wages of the people who are employed, you know, at Walmart. And, you know, they tried so hard to change that, and eventually they give them a little more money, you know. But the point was, these people are living in basically abject poverty while Walmart is raking in billions and billions in profits for the family that owns 51% of the share and the government, that corporations that own, you know, the other 30 or 40%, and then the private individual investors. But it's mostly government and the family, the bloodline that own Walmart, that are benefiting from the entirety of the employment, the use, the tenants, the employees that are of Walmart. It's almost like a perfect microcosm example of the sameness, the simulation. In other words, Walmart is like the employment structure is very similar to the political structure of the United States, where you have that sort of middle to lower class of people that just can barely make it by because the system is so perfect, the system is so well organized and well defined that you have that class structure, and
well,
we don't like to recognize it.
plantation owners had to feed, clothe, and shelter their slaves.
Yep.
You know, there's a cost involved with keeping a slave. And if the cost of keeping that slave should outweigh the profit margin, there will be a change in the system. But right now, you're right, as it works right now, the way, and keep in mind, guys, that it is not that this is the way it was set up to begin with. This is what it morphed into after the Civil War when the banking interest took over. You know, it's very important to understand that pre-Civil War, this country was totally different. Me and you had a beef, Clint. We could walk right out in the street and settle it, and no one would interfere. Do you see that?
Yeah, you'd be dead, man. I would draw on you. Yeah, the notion of I would never do that. The notion of civil is even defined that way, and I love this definition. When they define civil, I think this is Black's Law, I just copied it, but a prisoner's statutory obligation to pay for his keep and maintenance is civil.
Yes.
A prisoner's statutory obligation to pay for his own keep, his own imprisonment, the expenses of his own imprisonment and maintenance and all the food and everything that it takes to keep the prisoner in jail is a civil obligation. Now apply that to a civilian, to a citizen, because civic is pertaining to a city or a citizen. It's the same thing. A natural proper to a citizen. That's what civil means. I mean, this is, you know, you think of it, you look at it that way, and you're like, oh my God, we are literally paying for our own captivity, our own slavery.
Here, the Tucker by statute, it says anyone receiving the benefit of incarceration, you know, you see what I'm saying? So, you know, this is why I would agree with some when they say waive a benefit, because no one can force a benefit upon you.
Jeez. Yeah, well, we've always said that and I have a deeper understanding, but not one that I can say out loud and show you, but that I mean, I've always known that prisoners in jail are there voluntarily. I could just never explain why.
Well, because most of the time they're knuckleheads. You know what I mean? And say again?
Well, yeah. I mean, no knowledge to stand up and say, I don't accept your benefit.
Right, exactly. And it is for their benefit, as well as others. You know, we get somebody who's a psychopath wanting to kill somebody. This is a different kind of thing, although they merge the administration and the court systems all together. But a lot of times, when they put somebody in jail, it's for their own benefit.
Well, all the time, I mean, really is what it boils down to, because, I mean, it's the same as throwing a drunk, or what they used to do, throw a drunk into the holding tank for the night, let him sleep it off. That was actually designed to help the man so he didn't get himself in trouble. It was
or
a preventative
someone.
Maintenance.
or hurt someone.
Yeah, exactly.
Then he'd really be in trouble, you know.
Right. So what they did, though, if, you know, again, if I'm wrong, is they said, well, you know, what we could do is instead of just putting criminals in jail, we could sort of join the two in this functionality, and we could put civil offenders in jail too.
Yes,
right. They're not really criminals. They haven't really harmed anybody.
Well, let's think about this, because remember, we always go back to the root of all our problems, and that's the love of money.
Mm.
All right, we have some agents operating agencies of the United States here in the state of Kentucky. When that agent breaks one of the laws regarding his activity while he's here in Kentucky, the state of Kentucky can't put him in prison. And guess who has to pay for it? The United States.
The civil society, right?
Right. So yeah, his society is going to have to pay for any cost that he incurs. So if we have a citizen of the United States operating a entity here in Kentucky, and he breaks the laws regarding agents and registration and entities, when we put him in jail, we send the bill to the United States. It's a money-making scheme, because I'm not going to sit here and pay the cost of housing your agent. You're going to pay it.
Yeah.
And this is all the big money, why they do what they do as far as giving prisons and money and all this other stuff, because the states have a legitimate claim against the United States saying, hey, your agents are getting out of hand over here, and you're going to have to pay for them to lock them up, or you're going to have to get them out of here.
Well, and for convenience sake, we're going to set up the court registry investment system and make a federal law that all monies that come into the state courts, the circuit courts, the district courts, go into a specific investment fund, and the CUSIP number that goes on to all sureties is going to be attached to the prisoner's name and Social Security number, and that's going to be used as consideration for security to invest in the stock market. So, I mean, they've certainly made a business out of it.
Oh, sure, absolutely, and it always is business. Even with the creation of the Constitution, the first and most important issue was the debt.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right, man, we'll be back. Stay tuned, folks.
Nice shooting. Hey, that's a sweet AK-47 chest rig. Is that multicam?
Yep, got it from StrikeHardGear.com.
Strike what?
StrikeHardGear.com.
Set your sights on StrikeHardGear.com. Tough, tactical gear for your Soviet-style weapon that's made in the USA. Affordable, plus a no-questions-asked 30-day money-back guarantee and lifetime replacement warranty. StrikeHardGear.com. Go ahead, pull the trigger.
The IRS is a private corporation, not a government agency. Income tax is collected by voluntary compliance. To learn to unvolunteer or discontinue volunteering into the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com and immediately implement Strategy 1. The process must be repeated each and every time. Paper, letter, envelope, presentment, etc. Always and forever. Failure equates to acceptance, subsequent resultant contract, and you pay or go to jail by your own consent and agreement contract. Avoid recontracting. Visit escapeharassment.com and implement Strategy 1 immediately. Bar lawyers and accountants won't help you. Why wait? Get Strategy 1 and immediately implement it to divorce the IRS today and forever. That's escapeharassment.com, Strategy 1, to be free from the IRS. EscapeHarassment.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here is what people are saying.
Heart problems were in my family, and I did notice these chest pains occasionally. I decided to try it, and I don't think I'm going to stop for quite a while. Nothing has worked as well as this product has promised to. I've taken, supplements and that sort of thing, and never really noticed a difference.
Well, I turned 60, and when I went into the doctor to get my reports, the lady at the desk, she looked at it, and she says, wow. I says, what's that say? So she came back and looked at my last check. She says, well, you've gone down half on your cholesterol. So she says, I guess don't do a thing, only what you're doing right now.
To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hi, my name is David Merlin from takefromcaesar.us. Income is defined in the tax code. All property is a cost, including labor, according to statute. You're deprived of the provisions of Section 83 whenever you pay an income tax on your compensation. According to Section 83, only the excess over the amount paid is gross income. The government can't so much as provide an interpretation of Section 83 of its own. Get your paradigm shift and understanding today at takefromcaesar.us.
Hey, neighbor. Welcome again to this neighborhood. I'd like to show you something. You know what this is? Well, maybe if I press this button.
There are so many things to learn about in this world, and so many people who can help us learn, and so many people who can help us learn.
Did you ever grow anything?
garden of your mind.
In the garden of your mind.
You can grow ideas in the garden of your mind.
In the garden of your mind.
It's good to be curious.
All right, what's next? You're in the corporation. We're talking to KW today. Now, I want to read you something, KW. I just want to get your take on this because, you know, I've done a couple little expositions on the lawmakers that are hanging in Congress, right, in the congressional place. You know, we don't see it on camera, although we do see the fasci that are hanging in the back that nobody ever seems to be concerned about. Okay. Symbol of fascism, in other words. But back on the walls where they exit the building, not where the cameras show, are the lawmakers. There's like 22 busts, marble statuettes, basically, heads of the lawmakers. Justinian, some of the popes, etc., etc., etc. And it's interesting. Oh, Hammurabi is up there. It's just, you know, it's a bunch of old, basically, lawmakers. And as I was reading the definition here for civil law, it says civil law, Roman law, and Roman civil law are convertible phrases, meaning the same system of jurisprudence. That rule of action which every particular nation, commonwealth, or city has established particularly for itself, more properly called municipal law, to distinguish it from the law of nature, and from international law, that division of the municipal law, which is occupied with the exposition and enforcement of civil rights, as distinguished from criminal law. It's a system of jurisprudence held and administered in the Roman Empire, as distinguished from the common law of England and the canon law, etc., etc., etc. Now, when we go over and we see, well, okay, so what is the heck is Roman law then? It's defined in a general sense, all the laws which prevailed among the Romans, etc., etc. In a more restricted sense, the Germans understand by this term merely the law of Justinian, one of the lawmakers in Congress, again. In England and America, it appears to be customary to use the phrase indifferently, the civil law, to distinguish the whole system of Roman jurisprudence, so we used civil law to designate the whole system of Roman jurisprudence, including the corpus juris civilis, or if any distinction is drawn, the expression civil law denotes the system of jurisprudence obtaining in those countries of continental Europe which have derived their etc. Roman law. Point being that it's kind of... I don't know, you know, I've read the Treaty of Paris, Treaty of Peace, I've read all of these things, and I never have seen any evidence that we were ever really separated from the crown, nor that the crown was ever really separated from the Roman Empire. Seems to me to just be an empire that pops up one place, pops up in the next, going through cycles, because that's necessary, because there's always a corruptive element, and then it'll start over again, just as we're kind of seeing right now. So my question to you is, what do you think of that? I mean, if civil law is Roman law, Roman civil law, in other words, and it, you know, it might look differently or appear differently, be written different words, etc., but... seems to me that I remember Roman law, Roman civil law, the word Roman meant pagan, specifically because the people were going into the religion of the Catholic Church as opposed to following the quote-unquote Christian way of Christ. So when we get back, I just want you to comment on this because it's pretty strange to actually read this and show over and over that the civil law just means the Roman law in our society. So we'll be back, folks. Stay tuned.
With financial